This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Think about where you are when you listen to KPFT. At home, in your car, while you exercise, or at work. That's one of the things that makes KPFT so important to you. The music is something you love, and being able to listen from anywhere at any time is something you value. Without your support, none of this would be possible. That's because listeners provide the most important source of funding to community radio and to KPFT. Please make a difference now in what you hear and where you hear it. Call with your pledge of support, 713-526-KPFT. This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Falinski.
And Jennifer Renee.
Glenn Holt.
And we're doing it here. I'm sure you've been hearing this all day from temporary headquarters here
yes.
in the back of the station. A little bit safer back
Our
here.
Temporary facilities.
But most importantly, it is pledge drive time here on KPFT. And we're asking you, of course, to be able to call us at 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. And this is our third week in the pledge drive marathon. It'll go through Sunday. KPFT is an important resource to this community, and we're asking you to help that out so that we can keep on the air and keep doing really good programming. At least we think it's really good programming. On tonight's show, first up, we'll be talking to David Elliott from Washington, doing his Beyond the Beltway and Beyond the Beltway report. And we're also going to be talking to...
Oh, we're going to be with Director Aubrey Sarves of the Service Members Legal Defense Fund. He's the executive director.
And then also in the later in the hour, we're going to be talking to Maria Gonzalez, who is vice president of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, along with Jennifer Rene, who is president of the caucus, about the upcoming elections tomorrow. In the second hour, Jennifer is going to be talking to
Daniel Carslake. He's director and producer and director of The Bible Tells Me So. And if you haven't had a chance to see it, it was at the Greenway. You really missed a great opportunity.
Oh, it's gone already?
I didn't check today.
I think it's still this week.
I hope so, because if you haven't had a chance to see it, you've got to go see it. Absolutely. Take a straight friend.
Okay, and all that, but up first with us is David Elliott calling us from Washington. Good evening, David.
Well, good evening, Jack. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you fine.
Fantastic. You know, it's kind of hard to believe, Jack, and hello, Jennifer, in the studio there.
Thank
I think
you.
Y'all are the two people of the studio tonight, right? Jack and Jennifer?
Right, and Glenn's
yes.
running the board.
Well, hello, Glenn, also. it's hard to believe, but in less than 2 months, you know, to be specific, 59 days from today, 8 weeks and 3 days, we will begin voting for president next year. Thursday, January 3rd, is the Iowa caucuses, both on the Republican and the Democratic side. And against that backdrop, I kind of wanted to talk about the big picture and the little picture, what I call macro and micro, because there are some really interesting new polls that just came out over the weekend. And both of these polls are done by Washington Post, ABC, a very reputable polling company. And I want to start out by talking about the large picture, the macro, if you will. 1 year away from the presidential election next year, this poll found that Americans are deeply pessimistic and eager for a change in direction from the agenda and priorities of President Bush. Concern about the economy, the war in Iraq, growing dissatisfaction with the political environment in Washington, all of these things contribute to the lowest public assessment of the direction of the country in more than a decade. only 24% of Americans think that the nation is on the right track, and three-quarters, 75% of Americans said they want the next president to chart a course that is different than that of the one currently pursued by the incumbent president. Overwhelmingly, Democrats want a new direction, but also so do 75% of independents, and amazingly, 50% of Republicans. Dissatisfaction with the war in Iraq remains a primary drag on public opinion, and Americans are increasingly downcast about the state of the economy. More than 60% of those polled said the war in Iraq is not worth fighting, and almost 66% gave the national economy negative marks. And this is kind of amazing and kind of depressing to me.
Yes, but isn't the ratings of the Congress even lower?
Oh yeah, but that's kind of complicated.
Okay,
you get into that. Democrats are distressed with the current Congress because they want the U.S. out of Iraq right now. Republicans are distressed with the Congress because Democrats are running it. You look at independents and you ask them, who do you want running the Congress, Democrats or Republicans? Independents are saying by about a 20% margin, they want Democrats running the Congress. Now, let's get a little bit more micro, because we do have the Iowa caucus coming up. The presidential primaries are upon us. For the Democrats, it's Hillary, Hillary, Hillary. She continues to maintain a very, very strong lead nationwide, although the contest in Iowa is so close, with Hillary maybe a couple of points ahead of Obama, and John Edwards starting to really, really fall back further and further in third place, and Bill Richardson also really, really falling back. However, among the Republicans, both nationwide and in Iowa, well, in Iowa it's not so clear, nationwide the Republican race for president is the most wide open it has been in 30 years.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, and y'all get this. when Ronald Reagan ran in 1980, he never had majority support during the primary season. And it's kind of this way again. I mean, former New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani has, about 33% of the electorate. John McCain has come up, moved into second place. He's got about 19 points, 19% of the electorate. Fred Thompson is at about 16% points. That's where he was when he first announced. Mitt Romney, former governor of Massachusetts, is a couple of points behind that. And former Arkansas governor Mike Huckabee, moving up consistently, is at 9%. Now, Mitt Romney, because he's put so much money into both his Iowa and New Hampshire field operations, and he's run thousands and thousands of TV ads in both states, he actually leads in both Iowa and New Hampshire. And it would not surprise me, and keep in mind that I've predicted all along that Mitt Romney would be the Republican nominee for president next year, it would not surprise me if Romney wins Iowa and New Hampshire and comes out of that week, he's, you know, going to be the cover story in Time magazine, Newsweek magazine, U.S. News and World Report. His picture is going to be all over CNN.com and all over the Internet. I think that he will emerge in February as the front runner for the Republican nominee. I have previously predicted that Barack Obama would be the Democratic nominee for president.
Yes, we have you at your word.
What was that, Jack?
We have you at your word.
Right. I am on record with that prediction. I continue to believe that Obama will win the Iowa caucus, I am less confident that he will emerge as the Democratic nominee. Hillary Clinton is looking very, very, very strong.
Okay. David?
Well, I'm not quite going back on my prediction that Obama is going to be the 2008 nominee. I still think that he might be, but I have to tell y'all that Hillary Clinton's strength is very, very impressive. She's polling exceptionally well among every single demographic group, except for young voters and except for African-American male voters. She continues to have a considerable lead among African-American female voters, which is kind of interesting. And she has a huge lead among among white women, which is kind of interesting because white women make up about 54%, 55% of the Democratic primary electorate.
Interesting.
Well, hasn't Hillary, this is Jennifer, hasn't Hillary recently, I know that if you listen to a lot of the different organizations, different media outlets, that Hillary had a couple of stumbles this last week.
Well, you know, I read about that, Jennifer. I read about that on a lot of different blogs. I read about it on Politico.com. You know, people were talking about the Democratic debate that happened last Tuesday, 6 days ago, when she simply refused to answer a lot of questions. And a lot of people did fault her debate performance that night. But here's what's interesting. None of that is showing up in the polls. I mean, it's like it's the, you know, the political pundits like me, you know, are talking about how she had this bad performance, or political pundits over at the Washington Post, or, you know, various publications. It's not showing up in the polls, and that's what's interesting. Maybe in another month or so it will, but so far, she continues to be really, really strong. I don't want to quite use the word insurmountable. You know, maybe a month from now when, you know, we're doing the November show, I might use that word. But she's looking incredibly strong. And, you know, I want to underscore the word incredibly.
It's interesting that amidst all of this, she seems to, you know, she's racking up the money. She's doing all the things. It seems to, if this were a football game, she seems to be playing the defense, you know, defense. She's just keeping from losing.
Well, exactly. And it's really interesting that you bring up that point, because poll after poll after poll shows that what Americans want more than anything else is change. And you have to ask yourself, does Hillary Clinton represent change? Well, on the one hand, compared to George W. Bush...
Absolutely.
Oh, God.
I think we would absolutely have to argue, yes. But compared with John Edwards or Barack Obama, that becomes a tougher question. Who is truly the candidate of change? And, you know, I'm not endorsing anybody, and, you know, this show, Queer Voices, isn't going to endorse anybody, but these are interesting questions that have to be asked. Who is the progressive candidate? Who is the candidate of change?
Well, probably if you really ask that question, it'd be Kucinich, but, you know, he doesn't have much of a chance to win.
Well, you know, Jack, 6 days ago, Kucinich went on this debate and said that he had seen a UFO. So, I mean...
Well, and he qualified that by saying it was an unidentified... He didn't say it was something from outer space. He said it was unidentified. And people just sort of jumped to conclusions.
Well, okay. Okay. I'll refrain my rush to judgment on that.
Right, just like Hillary sort of got boxed in the corner about the governor of New York saying that people who are not citizens should still have driver's license in New York for the simple thing about being able to trace them if they're in accidents. And that sort of got her boxed in the corner because they're saying that, well, she's just allowing illegal aliens to have more rights.
Right. Although I might argue that I would much rather debate the proposition over whether undocumented workers should have driver's licenses, which I think they should.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, I don't even know how to describe it. A discussion over unidentified flying objects. I don't mean to marginalize Dennis Kucinich, but actually, in a way, I do. As progressives, we should be in the position of advancing our issues toward the so-called mainstream.
Yes.
So that Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, John Edwards, Bill Richardson, Joseph Biden, Chris Dodds, whoever, are discussing our issues, whether they are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender issues, whether they are criminal justice reform issues, economic reform, you know, equal opportunity for women, equal opportunity for lower income kids to get good education in urban areas. You know, why do we so often have to look to Dennis Kucinich to bring up our issues for us?
Well, and that's right. You know, and tomorrow's also an election day, and we're going to be talking about some of the local issues in a later segment. But are there any Congress people up for election tomorrow, as in, you know, filling unexpired terms, that might change anything in Washington?
Jack, on the congressional level, the answer is no, but I'm glad that you brought that up, because only a couple of states, Virginia and New Jersey, are having important statewide elections tomorrow, you know, in terms of state legislative elections, and it looks like the Democrats in Virginia might capture the Virginia State Senate.
Great. Oh, great.
And why do I bring this up? Virginia politically is not all that different from Texas politically. Both states have a reputation of being, you know, so-called red states, but both are a little bit more blue than the stereotype has them. Now, granted, Virginia is trending blue a little bit more quickly than Texas is, but in about 2 to 4 to 6 years, Texas is going to be where Virginia is right now. Texas is already trending blue. People just can't see it yet.
Yes, I know there's a lot of talk about that. And in fact, next year, there's a chance that Harris County may turn more blue, but that's still going to take a lot of work. And as I was at a meeting late last week, it's that we still need to get our people out to vote. Tomorrow is an important day to go out. If you have an election tomorrow in your area, go out and vote.
Jack, I want to tell your listeners something. Everybody who has the opportunity to vote tomorrow must vote. They must get into the habit of voting every single election.
Yes.
Every eligible voter. Drag your friends. Drag your family. Drag your cat. Drag your dog. Drag everybody to the polls. Everybody must vote.
Absolutely. And David, you have some good news where you work.
Well, you know, Jack, I work at the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty, and we actually have a 9-month or so moratorium on executions in the United States. It's kind of unprecedented. It's going to give us some time to breathe a little bit and some time to work to abolish the death penalty in some states. We actually think that we're going to abolish the death penalty next month in the state of New Jersey. And then it's on to Nebraska, Montana, Maryland, some other states. So, yeah, things are looking up in the anti-death penalty movement.
Well, fabulous.
Excellent.
David, thank you for joining us again, as you do on the first Monday of every month, and we appreciate your report from Washington.
Well, thank you for having me, and I just want to say good night and good evening and good luck tomorrow to all the listeners of Queer Voices.
Thank you.
That's right. And speaking of Queer Voices, we're asking you to pledge to KPFT at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. It is real important, and we'll check out with the lobby right now to see if we have anybody to thank.
Not right now.
Not yet. Okay.
Nope.
So it is important. Let's get those phones ringing. Show your support for Lesbian and Gay Voices and Queer Voices. It used to be called Lesbian and Gay Voices.
And transgender.
And trans. Well, it used
to
be called.
The T's no longer silent.
That's why we call it Queer Voices now, to be totally inclusive of everybody. And we want to be as inclusive as possible because we want to talk to the entire city about the issues that we face. And we're asking you to support us at KPFT. Call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
I'm Ray Hill. This is radio station KPFT Houston. We're a listener-sponsored radio station, and we depend on their listeners to make contributions. I've been around here since 1968. No, we didn't get a transmitter until 1970. And I went on the air in 1975 with a gay show. In 1980, I started the prison show. Continuous broadcasting on public radio means that I frequently ask folks just like you to make contributions, tax-deductible contributions, to the radio station. And you can do that on this program. Listen for the number and give it a call.
You're listening to KPFT 90.1, Houston.
I bet he don't love me anymore, and I'll have to let him go. You say you're gonna take him, but I don't think you can, 'cause you ain't woman enough to take my man. Women like you, they're a dime a dozen. You can buy them anywhere. For you to get to him, I'd have to move over, and I'm gonna stand right here. We'll be over my dead body, so get out while you can, 'cause you ain't woman enough to take my man. Dig it, Steven.
Sometimes a man's caught looking at things that he don't need.
You don't say, well, he took a second look at you, but he's in love with me.
Well, I don't know where that leads you, but I know where I stay. And you ain't woman enough to take my man.
Women like you, they're a dime a dozen. You can buy them anywhere. For you to get to him, I have to move over, and I'm gonna stand right here. Well, it'll be over my dead body, so get out while you can, 'cause you ain't woman enough to take my man. No, no, you ain't woman enough to take my man.
Four, three, two, one. Take
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee, and we have on the phone Aubrey Sarvis, who is the executive director of the Service Members Legal Defense Fund. And here in the studio, we have Mark Lawrence, a gay veteran.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Aubrey, are you there?
Hello.
Oh,
hi,
good.
There. Hi, Zach. hi, Mark.
Well, thank you very much.
Hello, Jennifer.
Hey, well, you know, the main thing was is that we're sort of have guerrilla radio here with the renovations going on. So you would be amazed at how we're putting out the show tonight.
I'm happy to be a part of it.
Thank you. Well, Aubrey, tell us something about your organization and what you do.
Well, Service Members Defense Network was formed after Congress passed Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And this organization originally was a legal services organization. We provide quality legal services free to men and women who are being harassed or kicked out of the military under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We are also about an effort to have the law repealed. We've been working with members of Congress in this session, and we now have 136 co-sponsors of the bill to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the House.
Well, that's great news.
We're also working with a group of senators to have a bill introduced, hopefully this session, that would be a companion bill in the Senate to the House bill. And the legislation is pretty straightforward. It simply repeals the existing bad law.
Well, what about implementation in the military? Aren't they going to still struggle against it?
Well, we've been having conversations not only with civilian leaders at the Pentagon, but also, frankly, with retired senior Defense Department officials, both gay and straight, because I think it's very important to bring the Pentagon along and hopefully find a way where, as you say, perhaps they will not struggle, but actually come to see and recognize that this law is simply not working. By that I mean, since this law has passed, over 11,000 service members, active service members, have been discharged under this law. That's a huge loss of manpower when this country is at war. And perhaps even more significantly, and a much more difficult number to quantify, is we lose, or have lost, we think, between 40,000 and 50,000 service members who have just simply left and given up because they don't want to serve under this kind of deception and deceit.
Well, especially when the proof is in the other military forces around the world who do include gay soldiers within their ranks, that there's none of the horror stories that the current administration, as well as some high-ranking officers, say it's going to be or would be.
That's absolutely true. And it's ironic because some of our very allies, fighting with the U.S., irrespective of how you feel about the war, but our allies fighting with the U.S. in Iraq today, Afghanistan, ironically, they allow gay and lesbians to serve openly, and they are side by side with our U.S. soldiers.
And what has been happening? We don't hear any stories about...
Well, there are no problems. And as a matter of fact, the returning veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan tell us repeatedly, all we care about is are we standing next to and fighting with a good soldier. We don't care if she or he is gay or straight. What we care about is how they perform. And can we trust them? Can we serve together and fight effectively?
Well, that's all. Any small, any large army or small, it's always about the group dynamic. The small group where you depend on your buddy or the members of your squad. That's what it's all about. Is who, you know, when you're out there, whether you're in barracks or bivouacked or out in the field, it's about the person next to you where you can trust them, whether they can cover your back.
Absolutely. It's about teamwork, especially on the front at combat. What you care about, are they with you? And as you say, are they covering your back?
One of the things, Mike, what was your experience in your service?
Well, I was in the United States Navy from August of 1974 for about 13 years and some change. So this is obviously before Don't Ask, Don't Tell was instituted. The primary barrier for gay and lesbian, transgender service people at that point in time was the Uniform Code of Military Justice. In fact, that was a question I had for Aubrey, which is, does this bill that's being proposed, is that going to decriminalize the same-sex erotic behavior that's currently codified in the Uniform Code of Military Justice?
No, I think what you're referring to is Section 125 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And I think there's consensus among gay and straight soldiers that 125 needs to be updated. But the bill to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell does not address the Uniform Military Code, specifically 125. I think what, Mark, what you're suggesting there is that the update that is really needed, I think particularly from the gay and lesbian community, is that gay and lesbian and straight soldiers would all be treated alike under Section 125.
I agree. My experience when I was in the military was that gay and lesbian service members were usually counted among the highest performing members of the military, and that's the double shame about having them being persecuted and hounded out of the service.
Well, unfortunately, under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, it forces soldiers and sailors and Marines and airmen to be deceptive, to lie, and because it is very difficult to serve under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, you have to deny who you are. And under the law, if you tell anyone, a family member, a friend, the chaplain, that is a violation of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and you can actually be kicked out for telling a partner, for telling a family member. And we've seen this repeatedly. Unfortunately, when there's a domestic dispute, a former partner or an angry family member, is sometimes the person who reports the individual to the Army or the Navy.
Yeah. Aubrey, I don't want us to run out of time, but tell us about what you have planned for Veterans Day.
Well, actually, I'm in Reno today, and tomorrow I'm headed for San Francisco to meet with several organizations who want to help us in our national campaign to repeal this law. On Veterans Day in San Francisco, we have an event to honor every veteran in the Bay Area. And we'll hope that they will be coming to the Gay and Lesbian Center in San Francisco, participating with the mayor, with several members of the city council, with a couple congressmen from the Bay Area, and possibly the Speaker of the House. So we think that will be a very affirming celebration to kick off the Veterans Day weekend. In addition, we are participating with a number of veterans and other organizations such as HRC, the Human Rights Campaign Committee, where veterans will be, gay, lesbians, veterans will be placing flags on the mall, in the Capitol.
Oh, that's excellent. Will they be transgender, do you know?
I believe there will be. We have a transgendered member on our board, And she told me earlier she expected that they would be among those placing flags on the mall.
That's excellent. Now, if somebody else wants, somebody out in the listing audience wants to get involved somehow, how would they get in touch with you?
Service Members Legal Defense Network. They can email me, A-Sarvis, S-A-R, V as in Victor, I-S, at sldn.org.
Got it. Is there anything else that we haven't asked that you'd like to cover?
Well, I would urge you to speak to your congresswoman or your congressman, your senator, and urge them to repeal this bad law. Explain to them that don't ask, don't tell is not working. It was a bad idea. It cannot be dressed up. It cannot be fixed. It must be repealed. Urge them to get involved and be a part of the effort on Capitol Hill to repeal this law.
Thank you so much. We've been talking with Arbery Sarvis.
Sarvis. Yes.
You got it. Executive Director
Thank
of
you,
the, the Service Members Legal Defense Fund, and also Mark Lawrence. And this is Jennifer Renee in Queer Voices.
We young, we knew we were different. We didn't know how or why. And as we grew up, we found what was different was only our dreams and desires. But we learned the names that they had for us. We prayed they would never discover us. And as we waited silently, quietly, we learned them. We learned them silently, quietly. We learned them, oh, we learned them. How could we just believe what they said? Our beauty instead. How can we get it into our heads?
I'm J.B. Adams, co-host of the Zydeco Possible Show. If you're already a KPFT supporter, then you've already decided that the programs you listen to play an important role in connecting you to the world, and that your financial support makes them good programs to listen to. Your annual support makes it possible. You continue to rely on KPFT. Help keep it on the air by renewing your support now at 713-526-5738, or you can contribute online at kpft.org. I'm J.B. Adams, co-host of the Zydeco Possilet Show.
And that's right. We're asking you to support KPFT. We're going to go out in the lobby now and see how we're doing, if the phones are ringing, or if everybody's sleeping out there.
We do have one pledge, and I'd like to say a thank you to Cindy out in Pearland.
Great, absolutely. But we need a lot more people like Cindy to pick up the phone
now
and call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. It's really important. You know, this is our third week in the marathon. Next week we'll be back to normal programming. But it's always important to know that this is a radio station that is supported by the community. We're only here because of the community. We ask that you support not only Queer Voices, but all the other great shows, both locally and nationally produced shows, you know, like Democracy Now!, After Hours, some of the Technology Bites. I mean, look at the variety of programming you only can get here on KPFT, the Pacifica radio station. You know, we've been here since 1970, and we are still here only because you support us. But each day, you know, it costs a little bit more to keep the station on the air. And even though, you know, we're all here, even though the writers may be on strike, we're not on strike. We're here working, and we're all volunteers here on the show. So we're asking you to call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Well, tomorrow is an election day, and it might not be overly exciting. In fact, in the Chronicle today, they said there's probably going to be a low turnout, which we're not surprised at. But with me now here is Maria Gonzalez, who's vice president of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus. Welcome, Maria.
Thank you, Jack. Appreciate being here, and I appreciate Queer Voices. It's one of the few voices that actually asks the caucus its opinion, and we appreciate you all giving us a few moments to, you know, push some of our endorsements.
First, I must do a disclaimer. We, as KPFT, are a non-commercial radio station and a non-profit organization, and we do not do many endorsements here. But we are talking to the political caucus, who is one of the voices in the community and one of the organizations that actually endorses and tries to get people out there to vote and tries to educate the voters on who to support for the election. Now, this is a municipal election, meaning that we're going to be voting for the mayor, the city controller, city council, but there are also a few other things on the ballot, which is sort of a surprise because we don't usually have that in this cycle.
Yeah, well, a couple of things that we are seeing, and we do have a lot of state propositions. It was an odd year, you know, 07, the legislature did meet, and they came up with these propositions that had to be presented to the Texas voters for approval, and we ended up looking at one of them in particular, Proposition 15, for cancer research, and we vote for, we're recommending a vote for it. And if you want a little more information on that one, just go to www.killcancer.org. Yeah, that's one of those few things that we actually had some people come talk to us about it. We ended up endorsing it. The other thing we ended up seeing this time was a port proposition, Proposition 6.
Port, not pork.
Yeah, that is P-O-R-T.
As in the Port of Houston.
The Port of Houston. We ended up recommending a 4. We'd spoken to different organizations, including some of the environmental organizations that said, you know, the port is really cleaning up its act. It's working with some of the environmental organizations. We're just pleased about that. And one of the things that the bond for the port will be doing is to improve not just security, but clean up environmental issues and, you know, just make it a more livable port. The other thing we're seeing is rather really important to us and a historic moment. Houston ISD proposition. It's the bonds for construction improvement of HISD.
The Houston Independent School District.
That's right, Houston Independent School District. And what was really important about this to us is that for the first time, the superintendent of HISD met with the caucus, the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender Caucus, met with Dr. Abe Saavedra, who was, admittedly, he was lobbying us to support the HISD bond. We had a lot of discussions. We went back and forth on that one. Ended up also speaking with Representative Sylvester Turner, who's against it. But after we had our discussion with Dr. Saavedra, Michelle Pola, his chief of staff, and other members of the community, we decided that the HISD bond is good for the children of this city. And we hope that the rest of the city, we hope that everyone in HISD will support this bond as well. I do want to make one other clarification. This is the Houston GLBT Political Caucus PAC. That's our Political Action Committee. Rose Wall, Treasurer, just need to make sure everyone understands that the Political Caucus has a PAC, and that is a group that is endorsing the candidates and the propositions.
So as we go down through City Council and the mayor and controller, the endorsement card is available at the website thecaucus.org, or if you probably might have received it in the mail. But some of the contested races that are really important
to us, let's take a look at District D. That's very important to us. We're losing Ada Edwards, who's been a strong champion of our community. We really appreciate the work, especially the work she's done on HIV funding within the city, and we're losing her to term limits. We've ended up endorsing Wanda Adams. There's a lot of good candidates in that race, but we endorse Wanda Adams, who is also endorsed by Ada Edwards herself. Wanda Adams is a city employee, has lots of city hall experience. It grew up in District D, went to school at Texas Southern. It lives in the district and really sought us out. She joined the caucus last year. She's been an active member, has attended many of our events. She's really gotten to know our community. And at this point, we can say we're proud to support Wanda Adams for City Council, District D.
And District D encompasses the Montrose and parts of Southeast Houston.
Correct. The other race we're very interested and hope to have a little impact on is City Council, District I. James Rodriguez is a good friend of the community. He's been active with us. Many of us have known him. He's got a lot of City Hall experience. He happens to be Carol Alvarado's chief of staff. Lots of City Hall experience. Very young, very energetic, really brings a lot of energy. Just a terrific feller. And, he's young, but he's got City Hall experience and knows how to get things done. I've been really impressed with the professionalism of their campaign. The energy level is high. And unfortunately, the District I voter turnout is always so disappointing to me. Myself being Hispanic, it always astounds me at the low voter turnout in traditionally Hispanic neighborhoods.
And that's the east side in downtown.
Bingo, that's District I.
Okay. And anybody in particular at the at-large?
Yeah. City Council at-large 5 is very important to us. Michael Berry is termed out. He was never a friend to our community. We now have a really good opportunity to get a friend at-large 5. We've endorsed Jolanda Jones. Jolanda Jones is a Houstonian. Great lady, energetic. She's been a caucus member for years. Her son is a member of the caucus. They've been friends with our community for years. Jolanda ran some years ago. We were disappointed she didn't get in then, but this year, I think this is her year. She's lives in the community, works in the community, is very active in the community, and I have to say she's a proud product of the University of Houston. A phenomenal athlete. She was on Survivor. But, she's a go-getter, high energy, really close with our community. And we're just thrilled that we have the opportunity to replace Michael Berry with someone who'll be our friend, someone who'll work with our interests as opposed to work against us. So Jolanda Jones for At-Large 5. Finally, there's a couple of other races, down ballot races. For Houston Community College System Board trustee in District 1, we've endorsed Kevin J. Hoffman. He's a member of our community. He's a member of our caucus. He's a great feller. He's a real professional. He'll bring some very important insight to that community college board. Once again, HCC trustee District 1, Kevin J. Hoffman. And in the Houston Independent School District 4 trustee race, we've endorsed Paula Harris. HISD needed a new person in there. The previous individual who is there, who is stepping down, didn't participate much with our community. Paula Harris came out, spoke to us, said we will be part of HISD if she gets elected. We're pleased about that. So HISD District 4, Paula Harris. And one more time, HISD Proposition Bond, vote for it, please.
Okay, and then most of the other ones are the incumbents.
Correct.
And either don't have any opposition or very little opposition, including the mayor and the controller. And most of those endorsements coincide with the Houston Chronicle endorsements.
Yeah, I was actually rather surprised that in many of the races we'd endorsed, the Houston Chronicle endorsed. We endorsed the mayor, Bill White. We endorsed Jarvis Johnson, District B. We endorsed Ann Clutterbrook, District C. They endorsed Wanda Adams for District D, and so did we. District H, Adrian Garcia, he's endorsed by both of us. District I, James Rodriguez, I was really pleased to see he got the Chronicle endorsement as well. At Large 1, Peter Brown, good friend of the community. At Large 2, of course, Sue Lovell, past president of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus and out member of the community, and has done a very fine job these past 2 years representing the city as a whole. That's At Large 2, Sue Lovell. At Large 3, Melissa Noriega, someone we worked this spring to help get elected. We're very proud of her. We're looking forward to continuing our work with her. And then there's At Large 4, Ron Green, good friend of our community. And then, of course, there's At Large 5, Jolanda Jones. And then, of course, there's Houston Controller Anise Parker, also past president of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, active member of our community, and a very fine city controller. We're looking forward to working to get her elected to higher office as well.
Okay, so tomorrow people can only vote at their polling places.
At their precinct polling places. If they don't know where that is, please go to harrisvotes.org and, put in, you can put in your precinct number, it'll give you an address, or you can put in your address and it'll identify where you are to vote. harrisvotes.org.
And there's most of the polling places are open. It's not being collapsed like it was in the spring. So if you voted there before, it's probably very likely.
Yeah, more than likely. That's. I was looking over the precinct designations, and there doesn't seem to be any real changes that I can see. So if you voted there in the past, you'll vote there again. There's no collapsing going on. And Jack, you're right. The Chronicle said they expect maybe a 10% turnout. That's just devastating.
So that means your vote counts for 9 other people.
Just about.
Yes, if you go out and vote. So the polls are open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. tomorrow. Harrisvote.org is the place where you can find out more information about where you're supposed to vote. If you move since the last election, you probably should go to your old polling place, but you're supposed to re-register whenever you move. I think if you move within 30 days, you can go to your new... Is that right? You can go to your new polling...
That's a little tricky.
Yeah.
It really depends on when you moved and how quickly you got some of that information in. At this point, my recommendation is go to your old polling place and talk to your precinct judge. They'll let you know whether or not you're on their voter registration rolls. And your precinct judge will be able to direct you, and hopefully he'll also have, you know, voter registration cards to update your address.
So go early. So we're talking to Maria Gonzalez, who is vice president of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus. Tomorrow is election from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And just as important as it is to vote for vote tomorrow, it's also important to pick up the phone and call us at 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. We're just about near the top of the hour. I don't think we're anywhere near our goal yet. This is the third week that we're asking you for this cycle of our marathon, our fundraiser here at KPFT. And then we should be finished for the rest of the year if all of our pledges are you know, come through. KPFT does operate on a very small budget compared to most other radio stations. And most of us here are volunteers, and we're very privileged to be able to do programming here. And we really appreciate it. We hope you support us. So call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
It was never really in the closet. Everybody knew that Drew was a sissy. Star Booty is actually a character I created 20 years ago in the vein of John Waters and Russ Myers.
What in the world has the world come to? What has separated me from you?
Trolling in the park today. Transport me to another place. Another time.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Cambodia's PM disowns his lesbian daughter, the queen of drags, Booty, stars again, and a veteran songsmith, a 90s rocker, and a soulful traveler light up the audio file. All that and more this week because you discovered This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending November 3rd, 2007. Cambodia's Prime Minister Hun Sen delivered decidedly mixed messages this week when he urged the public not to discriminate against gays and lesbians while at the same time announcing that he's severing all ties with his lesbian daughter. He said during a graduation speech at a Phnom Penh university that he was disappointed that his 19-year-old daughter, whom he adopted soon after her birth in 1988, is a lesbian and is living with another woman. "I will ask the court to disown her from my family," he said. "We are concerned that she might one day cause us trouble and try to stake her claim for a share of our assets." Women's rights activists in the Southeast Asian country quickly condemned the Prime Minister. "You do not have to agree with her decision," said Terry Seng, executive director of the Center for Social Development, "but you have to respect her rights." A former Khmer Rouge soldier, Hun Sen has led Cambodia's 13 million people for two decades. He and his wife have three sons and two daughters, and the adoption of their third daughter had been a closely guarded secret, but he did not mention her by name during his speech. "I can educate people in the whole country, but I cannot educate my adopted daughter," he lamented. "We sent her to study in the U.S., but she did a bad job. She returned home and took a wife." However, he asked Cambodians to be more tolerant of gays and lesbians than he seems to be. "I'd like to take this opportunity to appeal to parents and society not to discriminate against them," he said, adding, "and do not call them transvestites." Homosexual acts are not illegal in Cambodia. Former King Norodom Sihanouk has spoken out several times on behalf of LGBT rights, and in 2004 posted a message on his website in support of same-gender marriage. The country's queer community, however, remains largely closeted.
Draft legislation was introduced in the Austrian parliament in late October that would allow same-gender couples to form civil partnerships. The bill was filed by Social Democrat Justice Minister Maria Berger and would give lesbi-gay couples nearly all the rights of marriage, excluding adoption. Berger's Social Democrats are part of a ruling government coalition with the Conservative People's Party. That party has resisted legal recognition of same-gender relationships, but there have been recent reports that it may now support a limited form of civil unions. Following committee considerations and possible revisions, the legislation is expected to reach Parliament later this year.
The Irish government this week announced plans to legally recognize same-gender relationships, but exactly what form they'll take remains to be seen. The government of Prime Minister Bertie Ahern said it would introduce legislation covering same-gender couples by the end of March, and expects the bill to pass within a year after that. Justice Minister Brian Lenihan described it as one of the most important pieces of social legislation in the history of the country, saying that it will cover pension rights, maintenance, and powers of attorney. But he avoided questions about other family rights, adoption, or what the relationships would be called, only that they wouldn't be called marriage. It seems clear that whatever legislation is proposed won't be comparable to the civil partnerships available in the UK, where gay and lesbian couples have virtually all the rights of marriage except the name. However, Ahern has warned that Ireland's Supreme Court would reject any bill equating same-gender partnerships with marriage. A clause in the Irish Constitution requires the government to protect the institution of marriage. Most LGBT advocacy groups expressed disappointment at the government's plan to apparently legislate only limited legal recognition for lesbi-gay couples. Karen Rose of the Gay and Lesbian Equality Network said during a national radio interview that he preferred full marriage equality, but that as a practical pragmatist, he welcomed any move to protect the rights of people in same-gender relationships.
In other news, about 50 people picketed Saudi Arabia's embassy in London on October 19th to protest the Middle East nation's reported floggings and executions of gay men, and specifically, according to reports in the local Okaz daily newspaper, the 7,000 lashes punishment meted out in October to two men convicted of sodomy in the city of Al-Baha. The London protest was held in advance of state visit by Saudi King Abdullah and was organized by the National Union of Students and the queer direct action group Outrage. Outrage leader Peter Tatchell said the Saudi government is guilty of detention without trial, torture, and the public beheading of women who have sex outside of marriage, and called the country a theocratic police state. And there were reports this week that extremist texts that encourage hatred of LGBT people, Christians, and Jews are being distributed at several British mosques that are funded by the Saudi government. Researchers at the Policy Exchange, described in reports as a center-right think tank, said they'd found some 80 hate-filled books and pamphlets in a quarter of the 100 mosques and Islamic institutions they visited. According to their study, the publications call for LGBT people to be killed and women to be subjugated, and include comments such as, "The Jews and the Christians are the enemies of the Muslim." The report is said to be the most comprehensive survey of its kind ever produced in the UK, and based on a 12-month investigation by several teams of specialist researchers. Many of the institutions mentioned are among the best funded and most active of Britain's approximately 1,500 Islamic establishments. A number of them have received official visits from politicians and members of the royal family. Some of the literature calls for Muslims to segregate themselves from non-Muslims and, on occasion, the report concluded, this attitude of deep-rooted antipathy towards Western society can descend into exhortations to violence and jihad against the enemies of Islam. But Iqbal Sakrani, a former Secretary General of the Muslim Council of Great Britain, questioned the political agenda of the Policy Exchange and told reporters that most Muslims reject such extremist viewpoints. "We cannot accept messages of hate," he said. "There is zero tolerance on that." The release of the study was apparently timed to coincide with Saudi King Abdullah's state visit to Britain. Several advocacy groups urged Prime Minister Gordon Brown to discuss human rights issues with the Saudi leader. The study urged British mosques that stock extremist publications to trash them immediately, and called on the government, councils, police, and community leaders to sever any ties they have with Islamic institutions that continue to distribute hate literature.
Literature of another sort made headlines this week in Jamaica. Each of the country's three leading newspapers were up in arms over reports that the Education Ministry had okayed a home economics textbook that includes households headed by same-gender couples as families. But Education Minister Andrew Holness angrily condemned the reports, telling a quickly called news conference that his department had approved a different book by the same authors. The book that is not endorsed by the ministry is the one with the offensive clause. The book that we have endorsed has nothing like that in it, he said, adding that we want to make it absolutely clear that the Ministry of Education does not endorse or support the teaching of homosexual relationships as the accepted standard of family. We don't teach it, and we don't recommend it.
Meanwhile, a U.S. group known for its God Hates Fags proclamations has been ordered to pay for the consequences of its obnoxious actions. The notorious Reverend Fred Phelps, who leads the Topeka, Kansas Westboro Baptist Church, was, along with two of his adult daughters, ordered this week to pay almost $11 million in damages to the father of a U.S. Marine from Pennsylvania killed in Iraq. The congregation, as they've done elsewhere, picketed the March 2006 funeral of Albert Snyder's son, Lance Corporal Matthew Snyder, because, they claim, U.S. soldiers are paying the price for America's acceptance of homosexuality. They carry signs with slogans like, "Thank God for Dead Soldiers," and "God Hates Fag Enablers." The Phelps attorney, Jonathan Katz, argued that burials are a public event, and that the church members were exercising their free speech rights. But the elder Phelps and his two daughters were found liable for invasion of privacy and intent to inflict emotional distress. The jury awarded $2.9 million in compensatory damages and $8 million in punitive damages to the fallen Marine's father. He has little chance of collecting, however, even if the judgment is upheld on appeal. Assets of the church and those of the three named defendants are reportedly less than $1 million, and verdicts in civil cases generally carry no enforcement provisions. The renegade church gained international notoriety for picketing the funeral of another Matthew, college student Matthew Shepard, who was gay-bashed to death in Wyoming in 1998. Congress and 34 U.S. states have since enacted measures to specifically ban such funeral demonstrations. Despite those laws and this week's verdict, the Phelps clan remains defiant, telling reporters that they have no intention of curtailing their protests.
But finally, the first five-star gay hotel in Latin America opened this week in the Argentine capital of Buenos Aires. The city has become an increasingly popular tourist destination, rivaling Rio de Janeiro for the title of South America's queer capital. Buenos Aires hosted the first international gay World Cup soccer championship in September, and in 2002 became the first capital in Latin America to legally recognize same-gender civil unions. The hostelry's developer, Spain's Axel Corporation, opened a five-star, 66-room gay hotel in Barcelona in 2003. Nacho Rodriguez, general manager of the new 48-room Buenos Aires location, told the Associated Press that, like any other business, we have economic objectives, but we're also about fighting to help the normalization and acceptance of gays in society.
That's News Wrap for the week ending November 3rd, 2007, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
If your true compass doesn't work in the transport systems because the soundtrack for an aneurysm is too distracting, we'll help you find your musical way later in the program.
If you wanna ring my bell. If you want it hot as hell, hear me STARRRT.
Drag performer, singer, dancer, actor, songwriter, RuPaul has achieved worldwide fame wearing a slew of different hats. From RuPaul and the U-Hauls to the Queen of Manhattan, the multi-talented performer has entertained in numerous films, stage productions, clubs, and benefits, not to mention music CDs, radio, and television. Most recently, RuPaul's film Star Booty premiered to sold-out theaters at lesbian and gay film festivals across the U.S. This way, our correspondent Dixie Trichel talked with RuPaul about some of the entertainer's earliest memories and latest adventures.
Well, you sure have been around the block a few times.
Yes, a few times.
Give us a little bit of your background. Tell us how you got into drag performing and, you know, what kind of entertaining you've been doing all these years.
Well, you know, I've always been attracted to living outside the box and pushing the envelope, and my career has always been about counterculture. I like pop culture, too, but I really dig looking under the hood of something and seeing what really makes it tick. So, you know, when I was told as a kid that boys aren't supposed to play with those things and girls aren't supposed to do that, I thought, well, that's a great place to start, doing the things that I'm told not to do.
Was this part of your coming out process, or did this actually happen later?
Well, you know what? I was never really in the closet. You know, when I was a kid, kids in the neighborhood informed me that I was gay, and that was before I was even sexual or anything. I was just, okay, well, I guess I'm gay. So it was never really in the closet. Everybody knew that Rue was a sissy. But, you know, the drag thing was, it was never about a hidden desire or anything. It had more to do with just pushing the envelopes. It's still not something that I do outside of work, outside of being paid.
More like a character?
Yeah, I guess just a different aspects of my own character, my own person. I think everybody on this planet, there's really only one of us here, and we all represent different aspects of the same thing. So, you know, I was watching Oprah like at 1 o'clock in the morning here in New York, and they had that basketball player on who came out of the closet. And it was interesting because they played a comment by the other basketball player who said that he hated gay people and that he didn't want any gay people around him. And it was interesting that what I got out of the negative comment from the basketball player was that he is our teacher. He allows us to see a part of ourselves that we don't want to acknowledge. So in that respect, there's a bit of that guy in all of us. Rather than censure him or go after him, we need to look at those places in us and heal those places in each of us individually. My goal is to live my life and to express myself in the time I have on this planet and to enjoy myself. It's a beautiful gift. Now, if other people can get something from it, I think rock on, lady. But my focus is on my experience here, you know?
Yeah.
It's selfish, but that's not a bad thing.
There's even a RuPaul doll now.
Yeah, she's quite gorgeous, too. She looks just like my sister, Renetta.
Tell us about Star Booty.
Well, Star Booty is actually a character I created 20 years ago in Atlanta, Georgia. And in the vein of John Waters and Russ Myers, I grabbed my brother-in-law's home video camera and decided to make some movies. And I did that many years ago, and it became a underground cult hit. You know, in fact, the characters followed me around for all these years. Since then, people will come up to me and say, oh, I saw your Star Booty movie on YouTube or whatever. So I thought it was time, especially in these conservative, politically correct times we live in, to bring Star Booty back. And Star Booty really is a spoof on not only exploitation films, but it's a spoof on the self-righteous. Character Star Booty is very self-righteous. She takes it upon herself to right the wrongs of society in a vigilante type style. My character goes undercover as a hooker to rescue her kidnapped niece. And there's lots of gratuitous hair and makeup and lots of gratuitous nudity and violence, but all with a funny result. You know, you can be politically correct. You can be a mindful human being on this planet, and that's great. But that's your choice. You have a choice in this matter. And I don't like being browbeat into behaving a certain way because other people think this is how I should behave. You know, you look after your experience on this planet. I'll look after mine, and we'll call it a draw. A lot of my friends from the underground came out to do this movie. Some you may know, some you may not know. Lady Bunny, who I started out with in the early 80s in Atlanta, Georgia, she plays a role in the film. And Candace Cain, who you probably know from the TV show Dirty Sexy Money, she plays the villainess in this film. And then there are a lot of male porn stars in it. Gus Maddox, who was Performer of the Year last year at the Gavian Awards, and Michael Lucas, who's another big porn star, no pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the kids came out just because they wanted to support counterculture. They wanted to support avant-garde and certain things that just aren't happening today. I would think that there'd be more of this kind of guerrilla filmmaking going on, but there really isn't. Not that I know of. Hopefully it's going on somewhere. They came out to support that and to support my irreverent point of view.
And there's also a soundtrack.
I love music. I'm really obsessed with music. And, and you ask any of my friends, they call me and they'll say, what are you doing? And they say, wait, Rue, let me guess. You're on your iTunes rearranging playlist. And they are absolutely right. I will record more stuff, but right now my focus is on the Star Booty soundtrack, and I'm doing shows and performing around the country.
Star Booty is going to be released on DVD.
Yes.
Will people then be able to get this in regular stores?
Absolutely. Really, do yourself a favor and support counterculture and people who dance to the beat of a different drummer. There isn't enough of that. This movie really is a labor of love in that regard. You just go head on and live your life because it's a beautiful gift.
That was drag diva RuPaul chatting with This Way Out correspondent Dixie Trykle. For more information about the recently released DVD of Star Booty, log on to www.starbooty.com. That's StarrBooty.com.
Coming soon.
So, you don't want to miss a week of This Way Out's global news reports, being introduced to terrific new music by openly LGBT artists, hearing about a new hit movie even before the buzz begins. The answer is a subscription to This Way Out. You can have our programs on CD or audio cassette delivered right into your mailbox, and for much less than the cost of a newspaper subscription. For easy how-to information, just log on to thiswayout.org or email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us for more information at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA.
A lesbian treasure, a former Judy Bat, and a sexy political New Yorker are the musical guests on this edition of The Audiophile.
Tret Fury is one of our musical treasures, just releasing her eighth solo album. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Audiophile. Tret's new album is called True Compass.
Drums and bombs and little children heading off to war. Wired cars and wired martyrs falling to the sword. What in the world has the world come to? What has separated me from you? What the hell are we supposed to do when the heart has lost its way?
My new CD, which is called True Compass, is my best work. I am prouder of this piece of work than I have been of any. I think it touches people's lives like nothing has in the past. It's very mature, it's very accessible, it's very folky, and from the reaction I've been getting, there's something for everyone.
It was a late night, it was the late fall, it was a late hour to make a late call, but it was a thing that I was hearing and the things I couldn't see. It was the way that you were looking at me. Sometimes it takes a miracle, sometimes it takes a stand, sometimes it's quite empirical, and sometimes it's so grand. But most of all, it needs to be a sudden leap of faith. It's a leap of faith.
Find out more about True Compass, the latest release by Tret Fury, at www.tretfury.com. That's www.tretfury.com.
Trolling in the park today, I spy a lady. mother's misty eyes meet mine. This instance where we both divide.
In the 90s, Jeff Heiskell was lead singer of the Judy Bats, and now he's resurfaced leading a band just called Heiskell. The album's intriguing title is Soundtrack for an Aneurysm.
This is my first solo-ish effort since being in the Judy Bats. Some people might remember the songs on this record, Love on the Dissolve, Little Boys Growing Up to be Drag Queens, Redneck Gas Huffers, and a song about my dying mother. That's what you'll hear.
He's a bump in the road, bump in the road. A bee on the vine, bee on the vine. Birds in flight, a long yellow line. In the trail of the heart of a tin can sky. Already gone with the wink of an eye. Life's a shot.
You can get more information about Jeff Heiskell and his album Soundtrack for an Aneurysm at www.heiskellmusic.com. That's www.heiskellmusic.com.
Transport Systems is the third and latest album by New Yorker Ari Gold, and with it he continues his sexy blend of R&B and pop.
Transport me to another place, another time. Transport me, give me a different face that isn't mine. And transform me, cause I'm not a well for this world. Transport me, didn't you know mama used to tell me daddy wished I was a girl.
My new album, Transport Systems, is about movement and progression, transportation and transformation. It's conceptual, it's confessional, it's sexual, and it's political. And it's about moving forward for myself as who I am as a person and also as a collective.
Are you ready to go?
You gotta go.
Find out more about Ari Gold and his album Transport Systems at www.arigold.com. That's www.arigold.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
Hey,
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Rick Watts, Tanya Kane Perry, Rex Watkin with Bill Kelly, Dixie Treichel and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle and Christopher David Frentum contributed program material. RuPaul, Trett Fury, Jeff Heiskell, and Ari Gold performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Listen online to This Way Out anytime and exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also get there by clicking on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are supported by charitable donations from you, our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air. You can also subscribe to CDs or cassettes of our weekly programs there. To request a CD or cassette copy of this week's program or sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages, email us at tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on Dade City Community Radio, Dade City, Florida, KRUX, Las Cruces, New Mexico, to BLU, Katoomba, New South Wales, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
This is Dean Becker, producer of the 420 Drug War News, Cultural Baggage, and Century of Lies. You want to hear the real truth? Do you want to know what's really going on? You know you'll never get the whole truth from Fox or MSNBC. Cheerleaders for war, for profits, for charlatans, for ratings alone. If you value the worth, the spine, the truth of Pacifica Radio, please show your appreciation. Show your support for KPFT, the station that was twice bombed off the air and rose out of the ashes to become a beacon of light and a purveyor of truth.
And we ask you to fulfill your pledges to KPFT and make them. Actually, first you got to make them before you fulfill them. But we're asking you, if you like this radio station, if this is the stuff you can only get on KPFT, the discussions that we have about things going on in our community, not only for the queer community, but from so many other communities, that only KPFT provides the forum for us to talk. I mean, we wouldn't be getting on KTRH now or Fox 26 or any of those
other
things.
No, they wouldn't let us in there at all, would
they?
That's
right. They'd lock the doors when they saw us coming. They'd think it's Halloween and they're hiding so they don't have to give us any treats.
No kidding.
But KPFT allows us to do this. They've been allowing us to do things like this. There's been some form of GLBT programming since 1975 here on KPFT, almost as long as the station's been on the air. So, and it's awfully quiet out there in the lobby, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So we're asking you to call us and make those phones ring. They still ring like old phones, old-fashioned phones with the bell, no electronic noises. We have just the standard phones here, and people actually write the pledges down. We don't have computers that we enter all that information in right now. But we're asking you to pledge, and you can do it in many different ways. I mean, you can make one pledge. You can do it via credit card. We can bill you. You can do so much per month, which is probably the easiest way to do it. And all that stuff is done very easily if you call. And you could probably get on that phone in less than a minute, probably closer to 30 seconds.
Absolutely. 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT.
And we have a lot of nice little trinkets to give you, too, as thank you gifts. But the real thank you get is the programming here. And know that you're part, that you're a partner in KPFT, that you are one of the family that supports KPFT, and that you get to listen to us guilt-free because
That's
you
right.
know that you gave your contribution. So call us now at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
Daniel, are you there? Daniel?
Yes.
Oh, okay. This is Jennifer Renee. We're with Daniel Karslake, producer-director of the acclaimed for The Bible Tells Me So that is showing currently at the Greenway and Greenway Plaza here in Houston, Texas, at least for another 6 days. Daniel, welcome to the show tonight.
Thanks, Jennifer. It's great to be with you.
I know that you're out there coming off of a soundstage, so thank you for taking the time to join us.
Sure, I'm thrilled about it.
Well, first of all, many people may not know a lot about you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself before we move on to For the Bible Tells Me So?
Well, I live in New York with my partner of 17 years. I am a producer of primarily television and theater, and For the Bible Tells Me So is my first film, and it's in theaters all over the country right now, including in Houston, as you just mentioned.
One of the things is that you've done a number of other projects, you said, in television. What other projects have you done?
Well, I really came up in television producing for a show on PBS called In the Life, which is a news magazine that airs nationally on PBS about gay and lesbian issues. I started there back in 98 and have produced for In the Life and then produced the show through about 2003 when I quit to make the movie. So really my primary experience on television was at In the Life, which is a great show and has really been around for a long time telling the stories of gay and lesbian people.
Well, I thought it was interesting when I was looking through some of the information that was sent to me. The story of the making of this production is interesting enough. It's about part drama and part a quest and a whole lot of miracle going on in there. How did all of this come about?
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, there was no mistaking that throughout the process. Once I stepped away from my job and we decided to make the film, sort of miracles kept happening. It's a very difficult thing for a first-time filmmaker, first of all, to be able to raise the money necessary to make a film, because making an independent film that you want to be seen by many people at theaters costs a great deal of money. But miraculously, the first person I asked to take part in the film was at that time probably the most famous gay man in the world. His name is Bishop Gene Robinson. He's the first openly gay Episcopal bishop, really, in the history of Christianity. And he had just been elected in New Hampshire and really literally was on the front page of every newspaper in the world. And I just thought, well, if I'm going to make a movie about the intersection of religion and homosexuality in this country, how can I not include him? So I figured out a way to get to Concord, New Hampshire, and get kind of around all his security, because at that point he was the most threatened public official in the world. He's getting more death threats than the President of the United States, who's usually the most threatened public official in the world, which was, to me, just in itself, incredibly striking. This is a man of God, a man of deep faith, who was elected by the people of New Hampshire to serve in this new higher position, yet people were sending him death threats from all over the world. That was very sobering to me. But anyway, I got in to speak to Gene one morning in Concord, New Hampshire, about 2 months before he was consecrated. And kind of miraculously, even though I'm a first-time filmmaker, and I really didn't have any material except for my In the Life material to show him, he agreed to let me tell his story, even though he had been approached by many movie studios and, you know, just sort of the people you would think were going after him were all going after him. And he said yes to me, and that gave the project and me enough clout to be able to start raising money. And then the Gephardts, Dick Gephardt was running for president at the time.
Yes, I saw that.
And he said yes. He and his daughter, he has a lesbian daughter, and they agreed to be part of the film. So things just kept happening. It was really quite astounding. All the way through, when we finally finished the film, we submitted it to the Sundance Film Festival, and out of something like 900 documentaries that were submitted, they picked 16 for the competition, and ours was one of them, which was another miracle. They just keep happening. You know, the fact that we're in a theater in Houston is a miracle. I mean, this was just a small idea in my mind a couple years ago, and now it's really getting out there, so it's very, very exciting.
Well, I understand from what I'd read, it all began with a church seminar, that you were approached to film a seminar in a church somewhere. Keith Lewis contacted you?
Well, yeah, it started, it was sort of two-pronged. It started kind of on both coasts. My part of the story, I live in New York. The reason that I wanted to make the film really goes back to my work at In the Life. When I first got to In the Life, I noticed they were never doing anything about religion on the program, and I just felt like there was so much going on, so much fighting was going on within particularly Christian denominations in the United States about the issue of ordination of gay and lesbian people, et cetera, that I thought we should report on that. And initially, the executive producer was very reticent and said, well, you know, we're on PBS, we have public funding, it's too controversial. But he let me produce one segment about an openly lesbian woman at Harvard who was also a theologian. And the day after that story aired across the country, I went into In the Life and I got an email from a gay kid in Iowa who had seen that show, and the five-line email that he sent me really is what made me personally make this film. He said, last week I bought the gun. Yesterday I wrote the note. Last night I happened to see your show on PBS, and just knowing that someday, somewhere, I can go back into a church with my head held high, I dropped the gun in the river. My mom never has to know.
Okay.
And that just so seared into me that religion has such amazing power to affirm and do wonderful things in people's lives, but it also has an opposite power to just completely devastate faithful gay and lesbian kids in particular, who not only fear losing their biological family, but also fear losing their church family and God.
Well, many
That's when I decided, probably in really back in 98, that I was going to do something to really change the conversation in the United States. Separate from that, a woman named Robin Voss, who lives in Orange County, California, very, very conservative county, went to her local Episcopal church in Orange County to hear a seminar called What the Bible Really Says About Homosexuality. She's a straight woman, a grandmother, but had a lot of gay friends who worked with her in the entertainment industry, and she just wanted to hear a new perspective. That seminar so affected her that she emerged wanting to find somebody to put the seminar on tape so that people could see it. And so Keith Lewis, who is a friend of hers and someone I had worked with through In the Life, called me and said, gosh, Dan, do you know anybody who knows anything about homosexuality and religion? And I had done many, many stories by that point on the topic. So he said, this is what we want to do. And I said, well, that's great, but I think I'd rather make a film that tells people stories, that isn't someone standing up in front of an audience giving a seminar, but actually you get to know people. You get to know Christians who have struggled with this and come out the other side. You get to hear from progressive theologians about what does the Bible really say about homosexuality. You sort of hopefully draw people in with the human stories and also give them some information. So they allowed me to kind of go with my vision, and that's how we came together, sort of separately, but then we came together and made it happen together.
I thought it was very interesting in one of them that you coined the term movable middle, and I had never heard of that before, but I thought that was an excellent... Where did that come from?
Well, you know, I just think that... this is a very interesting point in the history of this country, because I think finally almost everyone in this country now has met a gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered person, either in their family or their workplace or in their school, and they're starting to question and wonder whether what they've always heard from televangelists from the Christian right about gay people is really true. So when I sort of coined the term movable middle, I'm talking about the sort of middle of the country, these people who aren't necessarily fully accepting or understanding of gay people, but they also don't fully accept and go with the, like, full condemnation of conservative Christians. They want to know more. They want to have more of a discussion. So that's what this film's about, just offering up and hopefully elevating the conversation to a higher level. It's not a movie that separates people further. It's not a movie that is sort of angry or condemning of Christians in any way. Actually, it's much more a movie that takes Christianity very seriously. It's about Christians, in fact, and it has many, many Christian theologians in it. But it just offers a new perspective. So that's really what our goal was, to speak to this movable middle who might be open to having a further conversation.
Well, I think that, you know, our show as well as other venues that we talk in, that's exactly what we're hearing. The media has put out more and more information about GLBT people, and people are wanting to ask questions, which is... the mind is opening, and I love that term, the movable middle, because those are the people that are moving. If they're off to one side, we're not going to be able to do anything with them, but we can always hold out hope. Oh, another item that I was wondering about, did you ever get any support at all from the Hollywood community since that seminar was out in Orange County?
Yes, I very early on I got a call. It didn't have anything to do with the seminar, really. It had to do more with the fact that I had kind of a passing relationship with the actress named Judith Light, who is a, you know, incredibly wonderful actress and a huge supporter of the gay community. She called me very early on and said that she had heard about the movie. She knew that I was coming out to Los Angeles with Gene Robinson for a very early fundraiser. And she wanted to throw a dinner party for me, and who did I need to meet in Hollywood to help me make the film?
Oh, that's incredible.
So
we
had
wonderful.
This long conversation because I didn't even know who to ask for. I said, well, Judith, I don't even know who I should know.
That sounds like
so
one of those miracles.
She went ahead and listed a whole bunch of people. Among them were like Max Muchnick, the creator of Will and Grace, Alan Poole, one of the executive producers of 6 Feet Under, the manager of Katie Lang, just a whole bunch of people who had been very supportive of the community and wanted to support the film. David Lee, who created Frasier and was the executive producer of Frasier. Bruce Cohen and Dan Jinks, who were the executive producers of Pushing Daisies and American Beauty and tons of really great movies. Anyway, so that happened very early on, and so that gave me a whole sort of cadre of people I could call while I was making the film, because as I said, it was my first film. But I could call Bruce and Dan and say, what kind of camera should I use? What do I do when I go on location? How should I, like, should I cut it in New York or LA? They just gave me such great, all of them gave me really great advice all the way through. So it was very much supported by people who work in the industry, whether they were in, you know, California or in New York. They were still very useful.
Well, I got the chance to see the movie, and I tell everyone that's listening that it is excellent. If you've got the opportunity to go out and see it. If you don't make the time to go see it, it will be something that you will remember, and you'll want to bring your friends back to it. It's such a good way of telling the story about how Christianity and homosexuality has been miscued by the religious right.
Yeah, and we've been told so often that you know, you can either be faithful or accept your gay and lesbian child, or you can either be faithful or and give up your own sexual orientation, or you know, embrace who God made you to be. And I just don't believe that's the case. I don't believe they're mutually exclusive. And the movie's all about these five families who come from very conservative Christian backgrounds who have found a way in one way or another to keep and stay in their faith and still embrace their children for who God made them to be.
And that's the beauty of the story. If you haven't got an opportunity to see it, please go out and see it. Daniel, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. And we've been talking with Daniel... I'm sorry, I didn't stop to let you say something.
I'm sorry. I just said thank you for having me. It's been great fun.
It's been great. Do you have another project you're working on you want to put in a plug for?
I do have another project I'm working on. It's something actually completely different. I am making another documentary. I'm doing a little television work now, but I'm making another feature documentary about extreme poverty around the world and the fact that we now have all of the tools we need to end it, but instead we are spending our money in totally different ways across the world. And I've kind of a call to arms to make the moral choice and out of poverty.
Well, we'll get you back on to talk about it more at another time. Daniel, thank you so much.
Sure, Jennifer. Take care.
All right. This is Jennifer Renee, and this is Queer Voices.
KPFT is a community treasure worthy of your support, and four times a year we ask you to contribute to our treasure chest. I'm Janice Blue with Go Vegan Texas, one of the many volunteer programmers, all of whom give of our time for issues we are passionate about, issues you rarely hear on commercial radio, but that are the lifeblood of community radio. Just for a moment, imagine not having the choice to tune into 90.1 FM. Imagine what is left on the dial. Imagine first the silence and then the noise you are left with. KPFT is nourishment for your activist mind and political soul, reminding each of us we make a difference. In Margaret Mead's words, never doubt that a small group of committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. Please support Pacifica Radio KPFT, the station out to change the world.
You are listening to KPFT.
And you are listening to KPFT.
That's right.
Pacifica
and you need, well, they need to be calling in and listening to the to people out there taking their donations.
As we're getting towards the end of our show, and this will be the last time we'll be asking, at least we think so, till the end of the year. That means that we'll be doing full programming, including holidays, if there's any more Monday holidays. I don't know if, I don't think so. I think we're pretty clear. I don't know.
Until the new year, anyway.
I don't know when Christmas is. I have no idea. But it's certainly not Thanksgiving. But we'll be here every Monday, unless there's some special programming. And we do, we don't do reruns very often. Sometimes at the end of the year, if we have some of those old programs, we run the best of. But mostly we're here doing new programming every week for the GLBT community, and it's not just for the GLBT community, it's for the greater community to have some understanding, to build some bridges, to talk about some issues. And so many different programs here on KPFT do the same thing in their own way, and we're all here because we really feel that it is important to support this station. So call us up at 713-526-5738. Let's check out the lobby and see if the phones are ringing.
We have one phone call going right now.
Well, that's good. We have how many open lines? We have more open lines than we have non-open lines.
And I'd also like to thank Philip and Raul for calling in and donating.
Thank you, Philip, Raul.
Well, thank you very much, and we'd like to thank more people as soon as they call in and make that pledge. Our show goes on until 10 o'clock, and then there'll be other shows that'll be asking the same thing. So we're asking you to call us now. Call us now at 713-526-5738. We have some great pledge gifts also. You can make a one-time donation, or you can have electronic transfer. There's all different ways. We'll make deals with you.
We'll make a deal. The main thing is it's that if you enjoy the programming of KPFT and enjoy what you hear on Queer Voices, we try to give you live interviews of interest to you and to our community and to the community at large on political as well as social issues. And where else are you going to get it? You're not going to get it by calling one of the other stations or listening to one of the other stations. You're going to find it here, and you're going to find us here to support our community as well as the community at large. But we can't do it without your pledge. Your donation makes the difference in whether we're here or not. So please take a moment, pick up the phone, and call 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT and pledge.
Here are a few of the things you can get. For $60, you can get a KPFT logo t-shirt. For $75, you can get, a news t-shirt. So I guess the news t-shirt's worth $15 more than
the
regular. Well, and actually, because it does cost money to do news, and we can't always rely on volunteers to do news, that we actually have some full-time people doing news. For $75, you can also get a KPFT mug. Or at $90, you can get a KPFT Peace Tee. So I guess Peace is even more expensive than
news.
That's it. And at $90, you can, or you can get a cap from, there's just neat things here. KPFT Loberman Cordless Mini Radio Tuner. Fits on the ear. Silver. Okay. there is, we'll go all the way up to a number of things. And, there's actually no limit to how much you can give. And the donations are tax deductible to the full extent of the law. And that means if you get some type of gift, then that isn't part of the, that you can deduct. But, we do send out things at the end of the year, I guess, after a certain amount. So call us now and give that pledge and then fulfill the pledge. And there's lots of ways you can do it. We could bill you. You can get so much taken out of your account once a month. We're very, we make deals. We definitely make deals. And it doesn't take that long to do it. Or you can donate. Go to our website, kpft.org, and donate directly. All of that because of the important work that KPFT does. We don't take corporate sponsorships. We're probably the only one of the few stations in the entire state that doesn't take corporate sponsorships because that's part of the Pacifica bylaws. bylaws or charter or something like that. And Pacifica, as you probably know if you listen to KPFT, is a community radio station group. We own 5 stations across the country, and this is probably the smallest one of all the stations, and it's probably is in the oldest building, or the building that is that least has been repaired, because what we're doing right now is they're putting money towards, they just bought a new transmitter.
Yes. We're 100,000 watts.
We increased the wattage. We're in digital radio now, so if you have a digital radio, we sound crisp and clear, which sort of helps in the fact that we're not high as up off the ground as some of the other stations are. But it's really, really important. I know what they're planning to do, though, in the future, is that with digital radio, we can actually run a second channel if you have a digital receiver. And they're planning to do some great things with that. And all that's coming up because, and you can listen online, which is another neat thing.
Oh, yes, at KPFT.org. And also, if you've missed one of our shows or any of the shows, you can go to the archives at www.kpft.org and just click on archives, and you can listen to some of them. They keep everything on there about 60 days, if I understand.
Right. You can download an entire show and save it of the locally produced talk programs.
Absolutely. So don't forget, before we wrap up, please call and pledge at 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. Pledge now and support this community radio station and Queer Voices.
All of that, it's very easy to do. You just call us up, or you can log on to kpft.org. All of that stuff is very easy to do. And I'm actually looking to see if we have next week's show. Oh, next week, of course, we're going to talk about the Transgender Day of Remembrance.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Reed on the political beat, election review and runoffs. What else? We got, J.D. Doyle does an interview. All that's coming up next week on Queer Voices. We want to thank all of our guests tonight. David Elliott, who called us in from Washington.
Yes, and
Maria Gonzalez, who joined us from the caucus.
Aubrey Sarvis of the Service Members Legal Defense Fund. And also Daniel Carslake, producer-director of The Bible Tells Me So, that you can see at the Greenway currently.
Thank you for listening to KPFT.
Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
I'm J.B. Adams, co-host of the Zydeco Postulate Show. If you're already a KPFT supporter, then you've already decided that the programs you listen to play an important role in connecting you to the world and that your financial support makes them good programs to listen to. Your annual...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.